hands-on with the Magic Leap Mixed Reality headset and the tech behind the Pixel 3 camera, live from Tweet Studio, Paraluma, California, it is the new Screensaver. Yeah!
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
The new Screensavers is brought to you by Toto Washlet. Upgrade a once mundane trip to the bathroom into a spa-like experience with Washlet. To learn more and for special savings, go to wayfair.com/NSS and enter the promo code NSS at checkout. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Jersey, and welcome to the new Screensavers, episode 178 for October 13th, 2018. I'm Leo Laporte.
I'm Megan Maroney.
Careful with that axe, Eugene. That is, what happened to your hand?
I was trying to punch you. Oh, no, I wasn't trying to
punch you. I remember that.
I was running, and I tripped, and I fell on my pinky finger, and it broke.
And is this the new thing that kids do instead of signing cast? They do multicolored tape?
If by kids you mean Burke, then yes. Burke said, I can give you some flair there. Take my gaffer's tape? And
nice flair, Burke.
So, yeah, it's quite nice. And then it's not as rubby here either. So
isn't that amazing?
It really is.
So how long are you going to have that on?
Just another week, I hope. But okay. We'll see.
Should we give you iOS today off on Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that.
Because I don't want you to hit me with that. That's the real oration. We have a great show for you. Actually, I'm really excited. Nicole Lazzaro is here. She's going to show us for the first time ever the Magic Leap. There's been so much hype around the Magic Leap, but is it as cool as it sounds? Well, actually, technically, the answer is yes, because we taped this yesterday. But but watch. You're gonna love it. It's very exciting.
And the Pixel 3 is finally out.
Woohoo!
We knew almost everything about it. But
it wasn't much of a surprise.
No, it wasn't much of a surprise. But we have Rishi Sanyal from DP Reviews, and he got to speak to some people, some experts, about the computational photography inside the Pixel 3. So we're going to talk to him about that.
Yeah, DP Review, of course, the king of camera sites. And Rishi's a real expert in this stuff. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about how that camera works. Also coming up, you can't see it, but I'm holding in my hands the world's thinnest laptop. An amazing 8.98 millimeters, a review of the new Acer Swift 7.
It's very thin.
You can see it?
Mm-hmm.
It's invisible. No, it's not that thin, but it's close.
Could you like fit it in the back of your pants if
you
needed to?
You could slice a steak with it. It's okay, pretty sharp.
Good to know.
Yeah.
And Jason Howell is here with a review of the newest Android phone, which I am told not to call the not iPhone. It is the Sony X... No, that's that. It is the Sony Xperia 10... Z3.
I was wondering if you'd say X or 10.
10 Z3.
I think it's the XZ3.
Yeah, like you should. Yeah. So it's the Z3.
Like you should unless you're Apple.
Yeah, it's not an iPhone. That's the important
Apple's
thing.
Really muddied the waters with this 10. Like, what is X? Is it a 10? Is it an X? I don't know.
What is life?
Yeah. When is the existence? XR coming out? That's supposed to be
soon,
right?
Sometime, yeah.
Well, I want to find
out
about that.
I ordered 5 of them. They're cheap. $7.95.
They're nothing. They're practically giving them away. Also, our hot topics and questions from the mailbag. Actually, this was an interesting week for products. Before Google had its event, Facebook announced something. They kind of just sprung it on us. It wasn't a big event or anything. They just said, oh, by the way, we've got something called the Portal. These are cameras, and picture and screens. They look kind of like the Google Home Hub or maybe the Amazon Echo Show. It's a screen with a camera. There's a little one, which is a mere $200. That's a 10-inch version. And then there's the big one, the 15-inch version. That's $349. Mm. It has Amazon's Echo built in, but from Facebook's point of view, the thing that's most interesting is you can make Facebook video calls. You can even read stories to the kids and have faces superimposed on yours to really terrify them. And here's the thing that I just think everybody wants from Facebook, a camera that automatically follows you around.
Yeah, I don't know.
But wait a minute, it says it's private. Look, you design. Just put that clip over the camera and they can only listen.
I mean, I just wonder, like, at what point would we have thought this was cool? Like, maybe 2015?
Somebody in the chat room said, if you look up tone deaf in the dictionary, there's a picture of Mark Zuckerberg right there. This is the worst. I mean, you nailed it. I mean, there's no good time for Facebook to release something like this.
Yeah, they've apparently been thinking about it for a long time, planning it, like, before the Echo show came out, and then they had some sort of scandal.
So they just gave up.
Yeah, they said, we're always going to be ensconced in scandals, may as well do it. I mean, even Google, who came out with the tablet this week, or the Google Home Hub, there's no camera on it.
They were, like, very specific. They said, there's no camera on it.
Yeah.
I have Echo shows in my house. And here, and I gave one to my mom. We used it to make calls to one another. I have the Echo Spot, which also has a camera. I have that in my closet. So I don't know. I don't worry that Amazon's going to turn on that camera. On the other hand, Facebook has such a terrible track record. Well, I only ordered two.
Well, because you save $100 if you order
two.
Yes, I did. So you just saved $100 on two things you absolutely do not want or need.
And worse, I had to reactivate my Facebook account to buy them because they only work with Facebook. The good news, I didn't need to buy two. I thought, I'll have to buy two so I can call. But you see, there's Grandma scaring the hell out of you as a three little pigs. But you actually could call a Facebook directly or Facebook Messenger, so I really didn't even need to. It's not too late to cancel. They don't come till November. Maybe I will.
But do you think that we're maybe thinking of this in the too geeky perspective? Like, I guess I should have asked my mom if this was something she would want.
Ask her if she'll buy them. I'll sell it for cheap.
Okay. Or not even my mom, because she's on the techier side. But, like, just anyone who still loves and spends all day on Facebook, regardless of what they've done.
That's the interesting question about Facebook. I know there are people, many people, like 2 billion people that spend all day on Facebook. But is there anybody in that 1.5 billion people that loves Facebook?
Mm.
I think a lot of people hate Facebook, but it's not. You don't have a choice. It's like, well, that's where my family and friends are. I'm going to use it. I have to use it. But I honestly don't think people love Facebook anymore. Maybe some people do. Do you love Facebook? Facebook doesn't love you. They love your data. They don't love you. So that was one big product announcement. The next day, Google had its event, and they announced absolutely nothing we didn't already know about. In fact, if there was any surprise in the announcement, there was stuff that was leaked that didn't happen. Like, there is no dual boot Windows machine on a Chromebook. They didn't release Pixel Book 2. But they did release the Pixel 3X and L and the Pixel 3, which is not this, but looks exactly like it. They did release a pink version, which I'm told is quite lovely.
It's called Not Pink. That's the name of it.
They did release a pink version, Not Pink.
I like pink, and I'm kind of upset that they're calling it Not Pink as if there's something wrong with pink. Like, Google, what's wrong with pink?
Well,
it's
on Reddit said he went and saw it, and it's actually opalescent. So I don't know. Maybe I should have ordered the pink. I ordered the not black. There's also not white. Apparently, the word not means something different to Google than it does to the rest of us. The thing that's most interesting about this, of course, Pixel 2 had some problems on the XL with the screen. People who've seen it say it's much better. There's a lot of new features, but the most interesting thing always with these is the camera. And we're going to have a great report from DP Review in just a second about this camera. What else do they review? This Home Hub.
I want one of those. It's only $150.
It's interesting because this is not the first Google Assistant in a screen. Mm-hmm. Lenovo's made one. There's one
JBL,
from JBL, and there's one to come, I think, from LG. But interestingly, the platform that those three are using, Android, is not what Google's using here. It's basically a glorified Chromecast.
Yeah.
They decided to do something completely different. No camera. That might look like a camera. That's not a camera. It does have Assistant. They really pushed the fact that Photos ties to it, so you can have it as a photo frame. And it's, I, you know, you see how they're positioning it. Is a kitchen appliance or maybe as a bedside kind of a clock radio thing?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I think this is going to do great in the holidays because $150 is something you can imagine buying.
And that was their focus. They wanted to get the price as low as possible. That's one reason there's no camera. It's also a much smaller screen than you think. It's a 7-inch device with a 6-inch screen.
It's a little baby.
It's tiny.
Yeah, it's adorable.
Yeah, I ordered one. We'll get it whenever. Actually, did I order it or I put myself on the wait list? I can't remember. No, I did order that one. And so we'll get that as soon as that comes out. We'll also have a Pixel 3. So by next week, Screensavers will have some reviews of that. They announced something else that will be available later this year. Home Hub October 22nd, the Pixel 3 and 3 XL October 18th. Later this year, so they only are waitlisting it, a new Chromebook, the Pixel Slate, starts at $600, but that's without a keyboard or a pen. Add the keyboard for $200, the pen for $100. Now you're a little closer to $900.
So that's around the same price as an iPad Pro.
Yeah, with a if you add a keyboard and a pencil to the iPad Pro. No headphone jack, thank you very much. What's wrong with Google? Dual speaker. Even the iPad has a headphone jack, for crying out loud.
Like,
at least for the time being. 8-megapixel front and rear cameras. This is Chrome OS, but of course now Chrome OS, if you have enough horsepower, and this definitely does, we'll do Android and Linux command line apps. So it's a pretty capable system. I didn't order it, but I might if you tell me I should. Oh, there's also a fingerprint reader on this, which solves a problem, I think, with a lot of Chromebooks, is that you have to use your Google password to unlock a Chromebook, unless you have an Android phone to unlock it. And that's a fairly long, in my case, a fairly long, complicated password. I don't want to make a Google password monkey 123. So it's kind of a pain to log in. With a fingerprint reader, it'll be a little bit easier. Look at that keyboard. Now there'll be other companies making keyboards, including Bridge, but this Google keyboard has round keys. They say you're more accurate with round keys. Not as many inadvertent keystrokes with the corners gone, but it does look a little. I don't know. Do you like it?
I like the look of it. I read some reviews of people who had hands-on at the event, and they really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, people seem to like this new stuff from Google. So we'll have as much, we'll have it all. We'll have it all. And I mean, if I'm going to buy the Facebook portal camera that follows you around, I'm going to buy the Google Slate.
They also have a Qi charger because the Pixel now supports Qi charging.
Bought that too.
That also will work with your iPhone, I noticed.
Yeah, it's a standard charger. Although it looks like, and I'm not sure, we'll have to try this, the Google phone, when it's on that charger, does something different. It does does kind of like the Google Home Hub. It does a little photo show and stuff.
Well, it also will, if you have a Nest Cam, I think it will automatically
show that.
Up.
Yep, I'll try that. We'll have a full review of all these products. But right now, I thought it'd be great to go to an expert. DP Review's science editor, Rishi Sanyal, got a chance to talk to the product manager of Google Camera, got a chance to play with the Pixel 3 XL cameras, both in New York. And I guess you went to San Francisco and got to play with it there. Welcome, Rishi.
Hi. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you again.
Great to have you on. I wanted to get somebody who really knows cameras to talk about this because, of course, one of the issues with camera phones is they aren't even quite point-and-shoot. They're killing the point-and-shoot market, but they're certainly not, you know, prosumer level or better. But Google's pushing this envelope every release, and it sounds like this new one has some features that no other smartphone has done. Tell us about the new Pixel 3 XL camera.
Yeah, so I'd just like to, again, thank computational photography lead and distinguished engineer Mark Lavoie at Google, as well as the PM on the Pixel camera, Isaac Reynolds, for giving me the opportunity to meet with them and kind of step through all the technology. Just got a really nice fundamental understanding of what's going on. So there's a bunch of exciting new features. I think that we could start with just taking a look at some of the detail that's in these images from the Pixel 3 phone, simply due to what was introduced in the Pixel 2, which is the HDR plus align and merge algorithm. That's essentially when your camera app is open, the camera's always buffering 9 frames in memory, basically the last 9 frames. And then when you hit the shutter button, the camera will go back to grab those last 9 frames, or the frame from when you press the shutter and then the last 8 frames, and align them all and then average them. And that gives it the advantage of having the noise performance of essentially a sensor almost 9 times as large because you're collecting 9 times as much light.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Apple's doing a similar thing with 5 images on its iPhone XS. And, of course, Google did this last year. Nine images, but what if things move? How does it, I mean, how quickly is it gathering those images?
So in good light, it's gathering them 60 times a second. So it's really, really fast. Okay. In very, very low light, it might drop to 30, 20, or 15, but usually never below 15 frames per second. And then what it does is it breaks the images, every single one of those frames up into thousands of square tiles, and then individually aligns the tiles. So if an object moved from one position of the frame to another, but still looks similar, like it's not like someone has turned their head and looked away while doing those nine frames that were captured really, really quickly, then it can just move those tiles back, so you can average even that moving subject. Now, if a subject moves too much, or it's like, if you look at the, I put that basketball.
Yeah, let's do the basketball image, because this is really interesting. So this is an image provided by Google that was created of nine frames. So the problem is there's a basketball moving. It's not in all nine frames.
Right. Well, if it is, it will have like moved up.
It's going to be here and there, and yeah.
Or it looks like he was just doing a throw upward.
It. Yeah.
But the ball's then rolling and turning. So in each of those nine frames, it does move. And normally, if it looked the same from frame to frame, it might be able to move it back and realign it and average it. But a spinning ball is just going to look different.
It's a different thing in each frame.
Yeah. So while the rest of the image looks great, very low noise, the basketball, funny enough, has a little bit extra noise in it because probably they couldn't use as many frames to average for just that basketball.
But what's impressive is that, A, they could take the basketball out of the other frames, and B, it was smart enough to say, okay, use this image for the basketball. It's going to be a little grainier, but it's going to be a complete picture. I mean, and it's doing this in less than a second.
Oh, it's doing it's the last 150 milliseconds that it gets. That's how where the nine frames come from. So it's really fast.
So you can really see, and actually there's some graininess on his arms and hands too, which were also moving. Things that move less are going to have higher quality than things that are moving. Nevertheless, you're going to get a complete picture. Yeah. Like for the backdrop, which isn't moving at all, the resolution is much better, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the important thing is you get this picture the first time. It's not like I've certainly gotten a picture like that, but it takes 100 photos and, 10, 15 throws of the basketball. This is just what it does when you press the button?
Yeah, exactly. Just their tile-based aligning and merging is just so advanced. And a lot of the cool thing about Google also is a lot of those techniques are published in papers. So you can learn about them. You can develop them on your own. But even it's just like taking pictures of my toddler who's always running around, moving around. I still get fairly noise-free images even of her because within those 150 milliseconds or so, she won't have moved that much and she probably won't look that different. So it'll just realign images of her face and body and get you an image that, normally wouldn't. 2-3 years ago, we wouldn't have imagined that sort of a shot from a smartphone.
The image looks really crisp, looks really, really good. And if you don't pixel peep too much, you might think, this was shot with a professional camera as opposed to
if go to the shot of the Yosemite at the beginning of the album.
So this is your shot, but we're going to show a shot that's actually from Google. But we presume that Google hasn't pulled a Huawei on us and modified these.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
If you zoom in here, just the level of detail you're getting from a smartphone camera is incredible. And it's largely due to that align and merge of nine frames.
So what they're doing really is not so much improving the smartphone camera to make it a better smartphone camera, but make it more like a DSLR.
Exactly. They're trying to overcome the limitations of the small sensor. And it's really smart. Now, DSLRs and larger sensor cameras would also benefit from this if they stay that much further ahead.
That's what I'm wondering. I mean, are we seeing this kind of computational photography in full-frame sensors?
Not yet. There are some companies and cameras that do some computational methods, like Panasonic's got 4K mode, where it's constantly taking 4K movies, essentially, and you can go back and choose the best frame. It's kind of buffering because it has...
It'd be a lot harder to do movies with 942 megabyte images.
Well, yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, do you really... You can do pixel shift on the A7R III, right? And that removes the need to demosaic, gives you more detail.
Right.
But the funny thing about this is as you get to larger and larger sensors and more professional cameras, I would love to see these techniques in it, but the need for them it's a little
diminishes.
Less if you already.
That's right.
Yeah, if you have exactly these things really need it, and once these catch up to good enough, and in many cases they already have, then you won't have to carry your big camera around with you. In fact, the next thing we're going to talk about is how they've now improved their buffering, their HDR Plus algorithm, to actually be able to hold more than 9 frames in this buffer. It can actually hold up to 15 frames now. And if you just think about, just mathematically, based on sensor size, if you're averaging 15 frames from this size sensor, all else equal, that should give you the total amount of light capture as an APS-C camera would get you. So, and since noise is mostly determined by how much light you've captured, it'll be very interesting to see if this can actually, you know, give you images better than Micro Four Thirds or approaching APS-C. We'll be able to test that soon.
When does the 15 image kick in? Is that a special feature?
Yes. So that's the Super Res Zoom. So this is new in Pixel 3. The Super Res Zoom kicks in the camera app. If you just open it up and you hit this little zoom, can you see this?
Yeah.
Or if you start pinching and zooming.
So this has always been a limitation of smartphones. Yeah. If you have a good camera, you can put a good lens. It'll zoom optically. Camera phones have always had to zoom digitally. It's basically blowing up the image, which means it's going to be
exactly
pixelated. Right. This isn't doing that, though.
Well, so what this is doing is with by 1.2x zoom or more, what it does is it takes 15 frames now, and it uses your handshake as well as the optical image stabilization system in this rear camera to kind of do subtle micro shifts and move this the lens around, so that while you're taking those 15 shots, you've actually moved the lens around enough so that scene detail can be localized on the sensor with sub-pixel precision. So what that means is you might have scene details that fall like in between pixels or on across 3 pixels or on half a pixel. But by moving the lens around and shifting the image on the sensor by tiny, tiny increments, you can basically sample the world much better. And this is a technique known as super resolution. It's been known for a long time. What the software then does is it takes those 15 frames and then again aligns it. And when you do that alignment, they actually do it at a sub-pixel level, at a much higher resolution than this simple 12 megapixels of the sensor. So when they do that alignment, they're able to extract sub-pixel detail, which means that you can get more detail, even though you're typically with digital cropping, you lose a lot of detail. But by looking for sub-pixel detail, you can make up for that to a certain extent. And the other really cool thing is all these cameras still have bare color filter array on them. You know, that's not every pixel records every color. You've got these pixels that are red, then green, then green, then blue, and you have to kind of mathematically figure out what the color is, the actual color is for every pixel. But this super resolution technique actually removes the need to demosaic, because they can basically sample red, green, and blue at every single pixel location, since they've moved the lens around and sampled every scene element behind all 4 of those color filter array pixels. So they don't even need to demosaic, which itself leads to increased resolution and decreased noise.
So the iPhone solves this by having a second optical lens.
Yeah, yes.
That's going to be a better solution than any computational solution, isn't it?
Well, Google's claiming that this 2x zoom on their phone is comparable to 2x optical zoom.
Wow.
But I would think about it this way. What about all the other zooms in between, like 1.2x or 1.4x or 1.5x? You're going to have to do that on traditional devices using a digital crop. But on this, if you actually pull up my image that I shot this morning on the roof, that's a 1.2x zoom. So the first is a super resolution image, and the next is a non-super resolution version. So you can see with that smaller levels of zoom, there's a significant increase in detail as well as a decrease in noise. So if you go to the forward 2 more, you can see in some of the shadows, that's the super resolution image. And if you look at the gutter and the the shadows of on the siding, they're much more noisy here than in the previous shot, because super resolution by doing 15 frames gets you subtler detail, and also the extra frames lowers noise even more.
But you wouldn't even them. You wouldn't necessarily notice that unless you had both of them.
You have to kind of pixel peep too. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the point here is that every single enhancement is just making the actual image quality of the camera that much better, right? So it's I think you will appreciate it in certain situations, but in other situations, an optical zoom, an actual dedicated camera, would be more useful. The cool thing though is that as you develop each one of these technologies to get the maximum amount of quality out of a single unit, you can apply every single one of these to any additional cameras you end up adding on here later.
You can shoot RAW with this, right?
So that's the next thing we really wanted to talk about. Yes, so they've introduced RAW in here.
That means not a JPEG, but every bit of the data that's coming into the sensor in a mm-hmm. single file. But is it a single image or is it multiple images? How are they doing that?
Here's the awesome thing. So the RAWs resulting from this phone are actually the result of those 9 or 15
wow.
frames that have been aligned and merged. So they're going to actually have the image quality of a much larger sensor. I would guess we haven't tested it yet, but just based on the math, if you're aligning and averaging 9 frames, we actually found in our previous test with the Pixel 2 that this could compete with a 1-inch type sensor like the RX100 because of all the extra light it's gathering from
those 9
frames.
Yeah, we talked about that. That's right.
Yeah, and if you do 15 now, that's going to start competing
wow.
with Micro Four Thirds or larger. And the great thing is with the RAW, we can actually decouple the effects of the JPEG engine and just look at the RAW.
Right.
At the RAW level, like what is the noise level? So we'll be doing that, and I think it'll be fascinating. But the other thing just to keep in mind is this is that really robust merge that Google provides, which, again, if you have moving objects, they will not be ghosted. They might have a little more noise. But for the most part, since those 15 frames are captured so quickly, you should have RAW files with amazing detail. I took a look at one already, and it looked really impressive. And you've got all the highlight recoverability that you'd expect with RAW. You have none of the color channels are scaled, so you can white balance without any, in a non-destructive way, and you can recover shadows as well, which are usually plugged to black and highlights are clipped in JPEGs. But you'll be able to actually take advantage of all that dynamic range in that what we're just calling merged or computational RAW file, and they're using DNG, so you can immediately
nice.
Use it in Photoshop. Yeah, it's really cool. And again, that need not to, the lack of a need to demosaic your super res RAW files should lead to increased detail. So it's very exciting. It's the right way to introduce RAW in this sort of a device.
One of the things that happens a lot when you're taking a picture with a backlit, like on a bright beach with the sun behind you, is that people's faces are dark because the camera exposes for the bright background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've got something they're doing computationally. Normally, what you'd do if you're, a professional is you'd use a fill flash. You'd have a light shining this way to counter effect
yeah.
the light shining this way. They're doing that computationally.
Yeah. So, first of all, there's, most phones these days, including the iPhones and everyone, they still do some level of HDR, right? And the iPhone XS is now doing it really cleverly with 4 extra interframes within the 4 frames of their buffer that have much shorter exposure, so you can grab more highlight detail from those frames. So just normally HDR would sort of kind of save the background, the sun behind her, and then just raise the exposure of shadows. But what they're doing now is Google already has, as we talked about earlier, they use this what's called segmentation in portrait mode to understand what human subjects are and blur everything else. So that was trained. It was basically used machine learning to train based off of a data set of a million images of human faces, subjects, bodies, to train their algorithm to understand human subjects. So now they're using that same segmentation-based approach to understand a human subject in a scene and then relight them only. Just raise exposure and give a warm glow to human subjects. And if done right, it gives this nice little glow to the face. If you look at the next shot of the groupie.
This one's amazing. I mean, this is very complicated because you've got backlight, you've got front light from the sparkler, and then you've got the people's faces. That'd be hard to shoot with for anybody with a pro camera.
Yeah. It would involve a lot of post-processing at least. And that's kind of the smartphone philosophy and Google's philosophy here is just one button photography, so you can focus on maybe even enjoy the moment rather than
what? No,
isn't that fun?
That's a great shot. I mean, I'm really intrigued by all this. When I think I want to try just not using all my camera gear, but just try shooting with a Pixel 3 XL for a while, just to see what you can do with it. And after all, the best camera is the one you have in your pocket. And if it's your smartphone, wow.
Exactly. And the really cool thing here is if you don't want all those smarts of all the HDR and whatnot, you can just grab the RAW file and just do whatever you want yourself. But you're still going to get the image quality of what you'd expect from a much larger sensor
camera. Can you decide on the RAW file after you shoot it, or you have to decide before you shoot it? Say, I'm going to shoot this one RAW.
You basically, in the camera app, there's a setting up here.
It says always save the RAW version.
So if you hit RAW and you do RAW plus JPEG.
Oh, so you can do RAW plus JPEG. Awesome. Yeah,
and it's all, I mean, why not just shoot RAW plus JPEG all the time? Because it's going up to Google Photos for free, at least until 2022. It doesn't impact your storage. So, you can just...
That's a good argument for the people who are saying, like, all this computational photography looks a little bit fake to me. And so you always have that RAW.
You can always fall back on it, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the night sight? Because that's the thing that I stopped taking pictures, like, in the dark, basically.
Camera phones, and digital cameras in general, but camera phones especially, are terrible at
night.
I
keep getting the new iPhone and thinking, like, oh, I can do this.
Never.
Even the last Pixel, which I borrowed for a month, it wasn't great. So talk about night sight.
Yeah, so night sight is doing... So some cameras, like last year's iPhone 10, in really low light would drop to a quarter of a second shutter speed. So that sometimes would give you better image quality in low light, but you'd also get blur from...
You can't handhold that.
You can't handle that. And if you have a moving subject or a person in the scene, forget it. They're just going to be blurred. And the iPhone's smart about this, though. If they see a moving subject, they actually up the shutter speed and sacrifice image quality. But... what Google's done last year with the Pixel 2 is they have this philosophy of the zero shutter lag, which means that as soon as you press the shutter button, that's the image, that's your reference image, that's the image you get. So in low light, they sometimes drop to 15 frames per second, but that means that the slowest shutter speed they could use was 1/15th of a second, which still would not be enough, even if you're merging 9 frames in low light. So what they've done this year is, rather than just taking a really, really long exposure, what they're doing is taking a set of 9 to 15, still somewhat long exposures, but short enough that you probably can handhold it and a subject hopefully wouldn't move. So they will, I don't think they've actually settled on a shutter speed yet, but I heard something around 1/3 of a second or 1/4 of a second, but they take 9 to 15 of those. So that simulates an exposure that would be up to 5 seconds long. But because you've taken multiple samples, you can then align them again, use their robust align and merge technology to simulate the effects of a 5-second exposure. So if you take a look at some of the examples, this one is what it would look like without night sight. And you go to the right.
That's huge.
Yeah, you get a lot of... if you zoom in, there's going to be some loss of detail, obviously. But it's not bad at all, considering that... I mean, this was taken in complete darkness.
Wow.
And if you were to use a normal camera to do a 5-second exposure, you'd just get blurred subjects. But again, by kind of doing it in a staccato fashion, by taking multiple exposures at like a quarter of a second each, then hopefully you can handhold a quarter of a second, maybe a fifth of a second, and have subjects stay still. But then you take 15 of those, and then you get what's equivalent to a 5-second or more exposure.
That's also good for, kids if they're not allowed in the park after dark. They can just take...
Mom, it was the middle of the day. Can't you tell? Hey, show the next one, because that's even more dramatic.
This one.
So this
that's
is...
a normal front-facing camera. That's what you would get.
And this is the selfie cam. That's what I find interesting about this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look at that.
And that's... So two things happened here. One, they switched to the groupie cam, which is a wider field of view, so you can get yourself and your friends. But, you look at the... dramatic difference in exposure.
It looks like there's a fill light. It looks like something's going on. That's amazing.
So one really interesting thing here also is that when there's so little light, it's actually hard to figure out what the dominant light source is to white balance properly. So they're actually using a learning-based auto white balancing pipeline to figure out what the colors should be.
Oh my
gosh. So there's a lot of, I know it's a buzz term, but there's a lot of machine learning that has gone into making these images better.
And by the way, and this is a big issue with digital photography and even film photography, which was often tested and designed using Caucasians, white faces. Often people of color just disappeared. And if you look at that image again, you've got three different skin tones, all three rendered perfectly. Perfectly. Yeah. That says a lot right there. I mean, that is truly remarkable.
I think their training data set, when they're teaching or iterating their algorithms, had in it, you know, tons
obviously
of different skin tones.
Much better. Yeah. So it sounds like Google can upgrade this stuff too over time and plans to. Is that the case?
Yeah, and some of these features might actually come down to the Pixel 2 as well. And in fact, Night Sight is actually not available yet on the Pixel 3. But yeah, the funny thing is, this is all updated all the time. So you can actually just get, we'll look at it next with the portrait mode enhancements. You can just get enhancements just downloaded over firmware because they just iterate their algorithms over time. So it's very different from traditional cameras. So this is what I wanted to talk about next is the improvements to portrait mode. If you go back left one, you'll see that the railing is still in focus, even though it's in the background, while another part of the railing is not. But if you go to the next shot, railing is uniformly defocused. And so this is an example of a subject that's a little further away. Traditional stereo-based algorithms, so with the Pixel 2, they use the split pixels in this dual-pixel sensor to get a depth map. And it's a tiny disparity. It's a 1 millimeter disparity, but you can still see two different perspectives behind the lens. And from that, calculate a depth map, because anything closer to you will have less disparity than something further away, or depending on where your focus plane is, of course. But sometimes that can lead to errors, especially for subjects that are further away, because there's so little disparity between the left and right pixels for as a subject gets further and further away. So that's a good example of what they're doing now, which is they're not just using the stereo information to generate their depth map. They now use a learning-based pipeline to generate their depth map. So they've trained it to be more intelligent. So if you take a look at this, Elmo's in focus, but there's some part of that table in the background is also in focus, and that shouldn't be the case. So this is the Pixel 2 algorithm. Now here's the Pixel 3 learning-based pipeline for generating the depth map, and you can see that now everything in the background is uniformly blurred. And if you look at the heat maps, this is the previous depth map that was generated, and you can see that basically yellow is closer, blue is further away, and you can see parts of the table have this sort of green-yellow that indicate they're like almost the same at the same plane as Elmo, which is not true. That's why it was not being blurred. But now with the learning-based pipeline, you can see the tables and everything in the background is blue. So that's definitely a part of the background. So they're doing a much better job of generating this a uniform, smooth depth map. You'll just get better uniform defocus, better transitions from in focus to out of focus, and also especially in the peripheries of the image, we used to sometimes find, or, you know, if someone is kind of like standing like this, you know, something, you know, the background will be defocused, but what you see through them, through their arm, won't be defocused. So those sorts of problems have now been addressed. So you should get much more uniform background blur.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I have a list of all the specs of the camera, but it doesn't really matter anymore what the megapixels are, what the focal lengths are, what the shutter speeds are, because there's so much computation going on that it overcomes the actual specs of the camera. So there's no point even talking about it.
Well, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
My question is, I mean, I understand that Apple also does machine learning, but it seems to me that Google is way ahead and has more data. I mean, do you think that Apple could ever catch up in terms? I know they could catch up with the hardware, but in terms of the computational photography part about it, do you think that the Pixel will just keep getting better and better, and the gap will widen?
I wouldn't necessarily say that. You know, Apple has lots of other areas in which they're as good, if not better, at. And they're also using very, very computational approaches and machine learning to do their to make their images. I mean, one thing about Apple images, I think, that is kind of commonly accepted is that their white balancing algorithm is really, really good, and their colors are great. And that's been done via a lot of computational approaches and learning-based approaches. So I think that each one has their strengths. Apple has taken a stride with the XS in terms of the range of tones it can record. It now uses HDR and those extra inner frames, even in panorama mode, as well as in video. So you get HDR video at 30 frames per second. So they're doing a ton of things right. They're also leading the way in terms of HDR, since we talked about earlier, HDR display of HDR photos. It's like the, you know, Dolby Vision and HDR in movies. They're actually applying that to stills, which means that typically HDR images tend to look flat because you're just totem mapping this much range into this little space. Well, HDR display means you can re-expand that again. So HDR images don't have to look as flat. They actually look more like the real world and still have that contrast without sacrificing highlights and shadows. That and wide color gamut photography, Apple's doing a lot of good things there in capturing and encoding more colors. So I think it's interesting to, I mean, we could go on about this forever, but they're doing different things, right? In a lot of ways, they are using similar approaches. That's why a lot of times some people might not even see the difference between the portrait mode between the Apple and the Google, even though they're taking fairly different approaches. So I think that's a more complex discussion to be had, and one that a little more nuanced, because they're both doing really good things, and I think we'll continue to see really awesome things coming from both companies as well as other companies.
We all benefit. That's mm-hmm. the beauty of the competition. Rishi, I want to thank you so much for your time. Rishi Sanyal is the DP Review science editor, and I know that you are working right now to get an article up on this, and that more will come and lots of information. I want to see all the tests. I want to see head-to-head, and I know DP Review will do that all. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, we're working on it. Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Always good to be on here.
My pleasure, Rishi Sanyal. And go to dpreview.com. And I'm sure over time we're going to see this is something that's so interesting to everybody in photography, and I'm sure we'll see a lot more of head-to-head comparisons, mm-hmm. things like
and
that.
And the interview that he did with those Google engineers is up there too. I watched it. So if you want to hear even more about what the behind-the-scenes are doing,
very nice. Before we get to this is a jam-packed show. In fact, you know what I'm thinking, Anthony? I think we should defer our review of this Acer until next week, because we got a whole lot more to take a look at, including the Magic Leap, which everybody's been so excited about. It's been so hyped for 5 years. We're going to have one in studio with us. And by the way, I'm going to, just for the occasion, dress up a little bit more, put on a nice jacket and so forth. But first...
Before you dress up.
Before I dress up, I might want to visit my Toto. It's
That's your toilet.
That's my, I have a name for my toilet. Honey Bear. Honey Bear. I love, you know, have you used our toilet? You have used our Toto's.
I have used your toilet, yes.
We have Toto washless. So this all started with Alex Lindsay, who got, everybody who goes to Japan comes back saying, among other things, you won't believe the toilets, right? They're like smart. They do all this stuff. And Alex Lindsay, I think, came back from Japan so much in love that he bought a Toto washlet, which is the state of the art in these high-end, high-tech toilets. He's been telling me for quite a while, oh, you got to get this, you got to get this. Finally, over Lisa's kind of, not objections, because I can't do anything if she says no, but she said, I don't know. I said, look, let's just try it. We can always send it back. Not really. I don't think you can send the toilet back. But anyway, I told her that. So we got a Toto in our master bedroom, master bath, and it blew my mind. We liked it so much, guests like you would start going into our bathroom, mm-hmm. so we got one for the guest bathroom. And then Michael, our 15-year-old, said, well, what about me? So we now have 3 Toto washlets in the house. It will change. It's an instant upgrade to your bathroom. And it's, by the way, not nearly as expensive as you might think, because you can add it to your additional toilet. You can get a seat. Basically, it's a bidet toilet. So let me tell you some of the features. And every one of these will be a little bit different. If you go to wayfair.com/NSS, you can see the list of features depending on which one you get. Auto open and close lid and seat. So you come in. Let me kind of walk you through the process. You walk into your commode, and the toilet seat rises to greet you.
Rises to greet you. Like the sun.
By the way, I don't get in trouble anymore with the wife, because when you're done, it closes automatically. So, in fact, the whole point of this is it's touchless. You don't flush. It's touchless. You could walk in like this and walk out like this. It's kind of amazing. The seat is heated. So imagine, you know, it's a chilly day, and you sit down, and it's like comfortable and warm and welcoming. It's like you wrapped yourself in a towel straight out of the dryer. It's like that kind of nice warmth. Or if it's hot and you don't want to have it in the summer, you can turn it off. You totally control it. So with the touch of a button, a wand extends from under the seat for a soothing warm water cleanse. And it is At first, it's a little, you jump, maybe jumped a little, did you, when you first tried it? But after a while, once you know it's coming, you kind of like get into it. And you're clean. It really works. No toilet paper. You wouldn't, I mean, it's you wouldn't wash your dishes with a paper towel, right?
True.
Right. The automatic deodorizer circulates the surrounding air over a filter to neutralize odors. Some models even feature some cutting-edge features like the pre-mist, which spritzes your toilet bowl before use. Afterwards, models with the e-water plus electrolyzed water will also spray your toilet bowl, helping keep it clean. Night lights, remote controls, on-demand water heating so you don't run out of water. And, of course, you're reducing toilet paper. You're helping the environment. And, frankly, your hygiene is 100 times better. And by the way, your friends are going to love it. More and more people are coming to these. This is the best thing that ever happened to your bathroom, the Toto Washlet Toilet Seat Bidet. Check out Wayfair.com for a variety of different models. Wayfair.com/NSS for more information. And by the way, if you use the promo code NSS for new screensavers at checkout, you're going to get special savings when you're making your purchase. I got to tell you, I know everybody giggles when I talk about this, and I probably, when we first got it, talked about it a little too much, but we love our Toto washlets. You will love your Toto washlet. So, what a great Christmas gift, a holiday gift. Get it before Thanksgiving so family and friends will be shocked when they
and grateful.
And grateful it's afterwards. They go, wow, that was about. Nice. Can I come over tomorrow? Wayfair.com/NSS at the promo code NSS at checkout, we thank the fabulous folks at Toto for finally, we've been pressuring them to buy ads for so long. That I love this thing. Please let me tell the world about it. Thank you, Toto. Toto Washlet at Wayfair.com/NSS. Hey, everybody. I know I'm dressed differently, but we recorded this yesterday. But we wanted to record it because it's very special to get somebody like Nicole in the studio. Nicole Lazzaro is the founder of Zeo Design. For years, she's been consulting game designers on how to make their games, what would you say, more interesting? More fun.
More fun.
It's a safe word.
There you go,
Nicole,
fun.
Welcome to the new Screensavers. It's great to have you.
Awesome to be here, Leo.
And she bought a magic box with her. This is a very nice case. Is this inside here? This looks like this came from your trip around the world in 1920. Is there something inside here we should...
I don't know. Do I look?
Is there a rabbit in this hat? Inside this is, look at this. She made a perfect case for the Magic Leap headset. Magic Leap has been so hyped over the last 3 or 4 years. Lots of investment. Lots of people who saw it couldn't talk about it except to say this is going to be a revolution. It's augmented reality or what Microsoft calls mixed reality. And I've been skeptical. But I have to say, before the show, you let me play with it, and I'm less skeptical. This is pretty exciting. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about this.
Great. Well, this is the Magic Leap 1. It's the Creator Edition.
Yeah.
So this is, essentially, it's the developer kit.
You're not going to be wearing that when Magic Leap comes to market.
Well, not this one, but it'll be a new
It won't
version.
Look this goofy, is what I'm saying.
That will be up to them. I don't know.
I don't think I can try it.
Yeah,
I don't think
sure.
It actually looks
sure.
That goofy. What's neat about this?
This is neat. Like, look at this. This is really cool.
It's actually, it really feels like next generation design. If you've tried the HTC Vive or the Oculus Rift, because go ahead, you better do that thing.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that thing. So you just
I have
it
a
up
big
like
head.
This. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all right.
And you tilt the glasses just
nose.
Slightly forward.
Yeah. And then you do that.
Okay. And then the other thing that's kind of interesting is instead of being tethered to a giant old computer, yeah. I'm actually, this is the computer. This is the whole thing.
Yeah, this is your light pack, which is the light field display. So the entire computer is in this external device.
Yeah.
It has some fans. You'll feel some air coming out on the side.
It's a little warm, but it's not uncomfortable. And
yeah.
It's not very heavy.
Yeah. And it's got this really brilliant design in that it's, if you see sideways, we've got
room. I can clip it on my pocket.
Just clip it on your pocket, yeah.
So, and she said, Nicole said, whatever you do, don't touch that button.
This button right there.
Don't touch that! Because why?
Because if you touch that button, then we'll have to...
The whole world goes away?
Yeah, the whole world goes away. You come back to reality.
No, it's a 5-minute reboot, so we don't want to do that. Well, first of all, I can see you. I can see you. Oh. So this is augmented reality in the sense that I'm like wearing sunglasses with some stuff superimposed on top of it. So it's not like Vive or Oculus Rift where I can't see anything.
Right. So that's the key difference, is that it's augmented reality in a sense that you can, it's like a pair of sunglasses.
Right.
So you've got, you know, it's slightly, the world gets slightly darker, and then then they project onto the glasses these holograms to get an effect that Magic Leap calls spatial computing.
Okay.
And it isn't just projected onto like your lenses in terms of like a windshield of your car.
Yeah.
It actually projects into the world, so you see the entire, you know, an experience.
It looks like it's kind of out there, not right here.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things I don't like about Vive and Rift, they make me a little queasy in just a couple of minutes. And there's debate over that. You mentioned latency, like the screen image doesn't quite keep up with your head turn. That would be one reason. They fixed that pretty much, though. These are very fast now. Resolution, maybe. That's part of it, because you've got screens right up here. They're not 8K. But I always thought that it was an issue of the difference between your focal distance and your converging distance. In the real world, when you look at something, your eyes converge, they move in, and you're physically, you know, it's this far away, and it's focusing this far away, and they match.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And our biology is designed that if they don't match, you ate some bad mushrooms, throw up. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, and the emotion is disgust. You can actually measure that by the crinkling of your nose.
Yeah.
Right? And so when you're making,
I don't have that problem with this. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a lot basically because you can use it's called framing, and it's a three-dimensional frame because you can actually see the real ground or objects in the world. And those move in the way that you would expect your entire life. And then you've got, you know, an overlay, you know, matched into that, meshed into that.
And the overlay doesn't, is there still that kind of convergence focus issue with the overlay, do you think? Or it feels like it's not here, it's there.
Right. The neat thing about the Magic Leap is I believe there are two light field displays so that you get a little bit of, you can actually get a little bit of focus where you're converging slightly.
So what's a light field display? That's the term they use all the time.
Yeah.
Is that a real thing or just a marketing term?
It's a display to use as a waveguide, you know, from the processor, and it's projecting out that then, you know, puts it into your, that you can then see.
It's not just a screen.
It's
Or like a heads-up display. It's not just reflect. It's like I think of this as like a one-way mirror, a heads-up display where it's reflecting off of a surface that I could see through. It's not working that way?
It's not working that way exactly, no.
It's a little special.
They haven't gone into the details on how that particular hardware works, but yeah.
So, by the way, how much? $2,500 for this, right?
If you get the developer edition, it's a little bit more.
Even
more. So, plus this brilliant case, you know.
You bought the case. It does not come in such a nice case, although I love this case.
Yeah.
And then there's this controller. Anybody who's used Oculus or Vive will recognize this. This is a pretty standard kind of, with a trigger in front, a button here, and a touchpad here. That's pretty normal. How does this communicate with the Magic Leap?
Yeah, so there's a magnetic sensor on your right-hand side here. There's a small box, that box there.
Okay.
And that's used to get the position. So unlike a number of other vendors that you require the controller to be in your line of sight.
Yeah.
This
could be behind me.
This can actually be behind
anywhere.
You. Right?
It knows where it is.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then this has cameras on it?
Right, right. So if you get in close, you know, you have, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 cameras.
8 cameras?
Yeah.
That's more than my Tesla. What is it doing with all those cameras?
Yeah.
But I'm not looking at, when I'm looking out, I'm looking at the real world, not a video of it, right?
Right. You were looking at the real world, right?
Okay.
Right.
And so what does it need those cameras for?
So those cameras are all being used to create the depth map for the entire space. So when you first put it on, which was, you know, slightly before, you know, you arrived, you actually walk around the space.
Oh, so you set this up by walking around.
Yeah. And some of the games actually have this fun Easter egg hunt, this easy fun like thing where they put a button over here and you have to go walk towards it, and then as you move to look to like where is the next
just to map it out,
and then that's an activity you do to help the whole platform map.
So this is well mapped out now. It knows this entire studio
it
space.
It knows the entire studio
space.
Okay,
how long did that take to do?
Oh, just like about a minute or so. Depends on the lighting too.
Okay. Yeah. So I actually have the specs, they wrote it down for me. There's an NVIDIA Parker Tegra X2, which this is in the light pack, which is a fairly fast processor, ARM-based processor, 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage.
battery life, they say 3 hours. Is that about what you're getting?
A couple hours? I'm getting 2 to 3, definitely.
Okay. Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, USB-C. Is this connected via USB to the pack?
Yeah, if you have a, we have a, there's a hub that comes with it.
Okay.
And then you can actually, got it in the case here. So basically one goes into the computer, you know, just by normal USB.
Yeah.
And then one goes into the light pack, which is your computer on the...
And that's how you would load new software?
Right. And then one is the, and then you plug this into the wall.
And this is the charger?
This is the charger, yeah. So that's the charger.
So even though that this is a not intended for consumers, this is pretty sweetly
designed. Oh, yeah, and then the controller comes with its own charger, too. This little, I think they called it a wall wart. So this is just, just adorable.
It is. Adorable. It actually, the first wall wart to look like a wall wart.
Yeah.
So this is, so that's interesting. They really do want, and I have to say, as weird as I look, I don't look as weird as I do in a VR headset.
It's and, quite a step better,
and,
I think.
And, you know, I think, how far off, Nicole, do you think before these kinds of capabilities will be built in something that looks kind of like regular spectacles?
I think it's going to be within a year or two. I
mean, that's soon.
Yeah, well, ODG's, the look of ODG's goggles has been, it's been there for a while. That's it's getting towards Ray-Ban, you know, kind of coolness and quality.
Wow. All right, and I have to say, the experience is pretty cool. We're going to play a game. This is a Halloween game, appropriately, that you designed in a weekend.
Right, yeah, I developed in a weekend.
Now, I'm going to walk around a little bit, and you can tell me what I'm seeing. So one of the things that's amazing on this is, because the computer is on my belt, I completely move around. Is this what they call 6 degrees of freedom? How many degrees of freedom?
It's 6 degrees of freedom, yeah. Three degrees is like you're rotating like a record or a ballerina.
Yeah.
And 6 degrees is where you can actually...
up and down?
Well, you can, yeah. Basically, it's, yeah, left, right, and up and down is three, but being able to walk forward into a scene.
The Z axis.
And then
the
be
Z
able
axis.
To go up and, you know, up and down, right? So you can, like, look under the table if you wanted to.
There's no pumpkins there, but there's a pumpkin right there. Now, this is called Pumpkin Bash.
Pumpkin Smash.
Smash.
It was a game jam. Just
So by looking at these, you can see they're disappearing. Now, I can see, oh, look, there's a pentagram with pumpkins in them.
Oh,
should
my.
Should I do something with that? I'm scared. It's spooky.
You never know.
It's hard to describe this. I know you're seeing the video. And you, by the way, we can see the field of view right now because of just the way the lighting is. There's kind of a box.
Uh-huh, yep.
But normally, the field of view is kind of disappears.
Right. It depends on, it's all on the way, it's a new way of thinking about design. I've been working on our other game, which is Follow the White Rabbit for VR.
Yeah.
And what you want to do, this one I did for AR first.
So this is admittedly a simple game, because you wrote it in a weekend. I just want to emphasize that. And the reason that's interesting is that you were able to. You wrote it in a weekend... using Unity, right?
Correct, yeah, Unity and C#. And then I got the forest assets and the ghosts and the pumpkins from the Unity asset store. So I didn't need to, you know...
You didn't design them.
I didn't need to partner with an artist.
Let me see how many pumpkins I have now. Ooh, there's one. Hey, get out of here. Go. All right.
Do you want to try the other one?
Yeah, let's try another one. So now I'm in it looks like a Parisian cafe. There's the doors... There's the manifestos on the wall. There's a top hat. Oh, there's the Eiffel Tower being built. Okay, well, that puts us in time. What? Uh-oh. There's some...
What'd you do?
Broken tea set on the ground that disappeared when I looked at it. Carrots. What is going on in here? And there's a painting on the wall. It's kind of... Oh, wait a minute. That's not a painting at all. It's a puzzle, and I'm putting it together here. Oh, look at that. All I have to do is find the pieces... Okay, I'm going to confess to you, I've played this once before.
So. Where were they?
Oh, drink me. No, I don't want to drink that. Not yet.
That's for after the show.
That's later. Ah, I think that goes there. The idea of this is a puzzle, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. So this is an escape room. The game is called Follow the White Rabbit. And it's a series of escape rooms around the world. It's a game about a magician who's been a charlatan, like, all his life.
Oh, so you might play this in different rooms all over the world.
Yeah.
Cool. This is fun. So this is another game. This is a game you wrote for VR.
Right. And I've just done my first port to Magic Leap. And now what you can see is that by the room, it's a fully occluded room, which works okay on Magic Leap. But really, the value of AR is going to be when I drop the walls out and then put these.
These are just objects in my room. Right. As opposed to this room that you built.
Right.
So that's what you do in VR. You build an entire space, but in AR, you're not going to do that, right?
Yeah, you want to pull the walls out and then dynamically place the furniture and the puzzles and all that, you know, in the room that you're actually in.
Right. But what's interesting about both of these is that these are it's not hard to write experiences in the Magic Leap. And what I really like is that you don't feel disoriented. You're still in your space. If somebody came in, you could have a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some might say, well, that means it's not as immersive.
And well, just imagine like having two people, two Magic Leaps, and then we're both solving this puzzle room together.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
One of the problems, of course, with virtual reality is the inability to interact with the environment. And you see here, it's not exactly, I have to look at something, mm-hmm. it grabs it, and then it puts it up on this puzzle piece.
Right.
This works. But yeah. The one of the big differences is I can't walk around.
You can't walk around.
Space,
and then,
I love.
You know, this is like, you know, with Follow the White Rabbit, this is just the first port, so I'm not, I haven't written code to place things, you know, on the different surfaces.
Right.
But many of the other experiences, and this is the real advantage for what augmented reality is, and spatial computing, is you really want to have the things, like really the virtual object and the real objects, you know, sitting in that same world. So we would dynamically place the puzzle pieces on your, you know, on your real thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you want to be able to duck behind, you know, your duck behind the wall or duck behind a couch.
So I could look behind this and not have seen it until I looked behind it.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
That couch is real. Yeah. It's my couch in my living room.
Well, then
but there's something behind it.
We put a puzzle piece like underneath on
this
the bottom
table.
Surface on the table.
So you
have to look at the bottom of the table and then you can pull it out, right?
And that's why Microsoft calls this mixed reality.
It's mixed reality.
Real
yeah.
reality.
Yeah. Well, that's why Magic Leap calls it spatial computing.
That's what they call it.
Yeah. Okay.
Tell me a little bit about developing it for it. You've developed games on every platform out there. In fact, people may not know, but you wrote the very first iPhone game.
Right. I designed the very first iPhone
game. What was that called?
Yeah. So it was a game called Tilt.
Tilt?
Yeah.
And you would tilt the colors?
Yeah, basically you just tilt the colors. It came out a week after the iPhone did, and all you did is you just, it was falling blocks, and so you had green one way and blue the other way, and you just earned points, you just tilted it.
I remember it. So you're no stranger to writing on a brand new platform.
Right.
How hard was this to write for?
It wasn't hard to get something out that was quick and easy.
Yeah.
So I haven't opened up the gesture API. I haven't done dynamically placed stuff.
There's a lot more.
It's down that
rabbit hole,
if
you will. Yeah,
exactly.
Have you worked with the HoloLens at all? Have you done anything with the HoloLens?
I've done a little bit of experiments. I haven't shipped an app on HoloLens. But,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have have some sense of the difference in development?
The path to me was a lot more intuitive on the Leap.
They're starting from scratch. I mean, HoloLens is basically a Windows product.
Right. And it has a very, Windows sort of feel.
Right.
So if you're in enterprise, developer in enterprise, you'll probably feel a little bit more home. Yeah, at home. And it influences the type of apps that are there, too.
Well, exactly right. And I really feel like Microsoft with HoloLens is much more interested in UI and a different way of dealing with business information, rotating Excel spreadsheets, things like that, than they really are building Minecraft on a table. They show that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can kind of
get
it's going to be more of an enterprise product. This sounds like it's a lifestyle product, not anything in particular, but just a life. They want people to have this in their home.
And they also want creative stuff too. They're really focused. How they're different from HoloLens is that Magic Leap is really focused on the creators,
right?
And so they want to have a wide portfolio. And you can see it with I just got back from LeapCon, and with the slate that they announced there.
Yeah.
So you have Dr. Gorbords, which is kind of a robot shooter game. You have Angry Birds, which is super casual.
Angry Birds in this.
Yeah. So basically, you have it's an FPS. They said a first person slingshot. And so
we're not shooting anything. We're just slingshotting.
Yeah. So basically, it'll scan your room and you place it. You place the world on your table, and then instead of just doing the sideways side scrolling kind of thing, you have a 3D pile of crates and lots of pigs.
Interesting.
And then you point and pull back.
Yeah.
And then slingshot your bird, you know, into that pile.
Sounds very engaging.
Yeah. And then Tonandi is great. It's like a music, it's an interactive music experience.
Yeah.
And so it just turns your whole world into this like underwater kind of wonderful, sea ambient stuff with beautiful jellyfish and seagrass that grows up, and that you can interact, schools of fish that you can
See, I almost think that's maybe the most interesting use of this is kind of non-traditional gameplay, more experiential stuff.
More experiential stuff on one hand, and then also, I mean, mixed reality, it's really about, it's a box of crayons, right?
Right.
It's got, no matter whether you were in games or film, you know, we've always had a box with three crayons, you know, a red, a green, and a blue.
Yeah.
And you've created great experiences, but with mixed reality, you have a fourth crayon, which is depth.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
And so I argue that if you're not able to play the experience on depth map alone,
yeah,
then you really aren't, you know, mixed reality. And I think a lot of games that have gone on to into VR headsets have been simply, okay, the menus are 3D, but it's still basically the, you know, the same game.
Yeah.
And so
Very interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's experiential, but I really want to emphasize is that you want to really, as a designer, you want to rethink, well, how is it that I'm actually moving through the room? This is lightweight enough, and then with the pack on you, you kind of almost forget that you're wearing it.
Right.
And then what I did, like with Pumpkin Smash, is just the feeling of going through a spooky forest, Red Riding Hood or whatever, or the Great Pumpkin, right?
Right.
And that you wanted to, like, you know, move as part of that.
Yes.
So the player is actually the joystick, right?
Yes.
The player is not just a remote little button thing that I'm doing, but me and my body. And that embodied computing, the embodied component of it, that's what really is making these experiences different.
Where do we stand right now with this Magic Leap? What do you feel like? Is this like Atari VCS days? How close are we to something really?
I've been in the VR space pretty much, you know, especially with White Rabbit for like the past 3 years. You know, I've ported it onto every headset that's come out, right? Just to see, like,
that's
what's
a
going
great
on.
Experience. Take the same game and put it on different platforms.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were really early, obviously, on this one. This is definitely a very different experience. And if you think about what AR is and, you know, full-on VR headset, it's just the matter of how much of the world you see.
Yes.
You're fully occluded in VR headsets. This, you're sort of blended.
I don't like that. And I'm really engaging with this. Although,
it makes a lot of people more comfortable to not...
Much more comfortable.
You know,
But it also feels more ghostly. It doesn't feel quite as solid as VR.
Right. One of the challenges is that it is... I think as a designer, on the design side and art side, it's really about, it's additive light. A lot of developers are finding that, like, Weta Workshop has done Dr. Gordbart's Invaders.
Right.
And what they did is they had the robots come in through portals that, you know, dynamically place on the wall and on the ceiling. And what they did is they made the portals kind of very steampunky. And because they have these really nice, you know, specular highlights on the welding and on the bolts that are in on that, you actually believe there's black there.
Yeah.
And it's really seamless, and it really sells it wonderfully. So a lot
of that's one of the problems is you can't make black.
You can't make black.
Because that's see-through.
Because it's see-through, right? Yeah. But if you look at it, and it's like,
you can trick people.
It's like because your eyes, like, you know, I was talking with I think it was George about who's the project lead, that, you know, basically your eye goes to the brightest bit, and so, you know,
it doesn't see the.
It's just not looking at those seams, so it just believes that it's, you know, that it's there.
So people are going to learn this new vocabulary. This is kind of like Oculus was in the very first Oculus Rift, which I did buy in the Kickstarter and all
there
that
you
stuff.
Go.
But it's very early days.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting. It sounds like you think this is going to happen pretty quick.
It's going to happen. I think that the quality of the apps that got released at LeapCon this week are definitely up there. They're still, you know, in a somewhat demo phase.
Right. It didn't take long for VR to go from $2,500 to $1,500, and now with the new Oculus, $300.
The price point has to go down, obviously, before mass market.
It's
got to
do the same thing for that.
Yeah, and then the other thing it has to do is the content has got to be really broad. And I think that's something that Magic Leap has done really well, that the catalog is that they've got something for
very casual. It's a chicken and egg. You've got to get this out, get developers and creators to play with it.
Well, but it's also there's also conscious curation. And I think Magic Leap has done a really good job of, you have Tonandi, which is a very experiential, you know, beautiful piece. And then you've got, you know, an action thing. You've got a creativity thing. You're hitting on all of the different types of the way that human beings play.
Yeah. Because what Magic Leap does now to creators will inform what creators end up doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I've worked, if you think of it, every transition of computers, you know, every 10 years they do. And then, so like with the CD-ROM, there's always a breakout hit. Like CD-ROM, it was missed.
Right.
With low-cost color PCs, it was The Sims.
Right.
With downloadable content, it was Diner Dash. you know, mobile phones, it was Angry Birds.
Right.
Right. And AR, it's, you know, Pokemon Go.
And all of those are very different.
They're very different. They're all casual mass
market.
They're
all casual mass market games.
Yeah, not necessarily. And then obviously there's hardcore games along the line too.
So that's what we're waiting for this.
So
the breakout hit.
What is the breakout hit? You know, and oftentimes it's a casual. So that's why with Follow the White Rabbit, it's escape rooms. It's very
interesting.
I love the escape room idea.
That's fun. Yeah.
We're having a lot of fun. A lot of really good. A lot of good reactions to it too. And we didn't even go into, I think we should just briefly, the apps we showed are first ports, so it didn't even take into account. There are, I think, 8 hand gestures this recognizes.
We didn't even do those.
It also tracks your eyes. So when I do a motion,
So there's a camera inside pointing at you.
There's cameras, there's eye tracking. And so back a couple years ago, I actually worked with iFluence and helped them design a hands-free productivity app, which is just using your eyes. So you could word process.
I could kill those pumpkins just by looking at them.
Just looking at them. And then take that a step forward. You could actually then do facial action coding. Paul Ekman's facial.
I'm smiling, I'm crying,
There are 6 emotions, 7 emotions you can measure in the face, and those cameras are kind of close. So we're really interested in taking that apart and seeing.
There's a whole lot more to be done in this.
There's a whole lot more to be
done.
Very
interesting.
Yeah, but the big picture is that it does sense your space. It will create a depth map, and so you want to have not just place your Legoland.
You need a big room,
and you want to be able to move around in that.
Yeah,
right?
So this was a perfect room for that.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other game that I played at LeapCon by Insomniac, it's just really cute. It's called Seedling. And just like little Groot up here is basically you get a field kit from a galaxy that's losing.
This, I want to play this. Tell us.
Yeah, so basically you get this little field kit, unlike this famous case.
Yeah. Except it's virtual.
It's a virtual. Imagine. Right, so it's just basically virtual. You open it up and then you get this little seedling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And a field guide.
Yeah.
And then you basically create, you basically plant it. You can plant it in the real world on your bookshelf, for example.
Yeah.
And then day by day.
You have to take care of it.
You have to take care of it, yes.
Put on the magic leap. Oh, I got to water you.
Water it, and you have to prune it a little bit. You have to, peel the blight off of it if it gets sick. And then what's really cool is that if you put it, in a bookshelf, where you had, two signs, it'll actually grow, in response
into
to that.
Into the real world objects.
Into the real world objects. Yeah, it'll get
you some kind of bonds. Don't move those books now, though, because you're going to really confuse it.
Right, right.
Wow.
And then you go through a series of these little seedlings. So I think that's amazing. So again, there's a lot of, I really love how they're coming up with a wide variety of titles, because it's getting through all the different types of ways that people like to play. And that's really important for a platform, because you want the whole family to be this, not just the one hardcore gamer. And there's definitely going to be, hardcore, stuff on here as well. But you want to have those wide variety experiences.
I mean, we get the form factor right. You wear this all day long. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't stop playing Pokemon Go.
There you go.
If I had, I would never come to work.
Nicole. Well, work would come to you.
That was a wonderful interview with Nicole Lazzaro. She comes back and does triangulation later that day, yesterday. So if you want to know more, and we talked not just about Magic Leap, but really about game design, what makes a good game, what makes games engaging, where games go wrong, and why games need to have a moral conscience, that's Triangulation from yesterday, twit.tv/TRI, with Nicole Lazzaro of Zio Design. I was really impressed. We're going to have to get her back and talk more about gaming. But I went on and on way too long, so I don't think we're going to have time to talk about this. This is the super thin Acer Swift 7, which I had hoped to review for you today. But you know what? I also have, and as long as we're going to do an Acer day, we'll do an Acer double day. People have been asking us about this Acer Spin. This is the giant 15-inch version of the Acer Spin Chromebook. But if you're looking for a Chromebook with a big screen,
that's nice,
isn't that?
Yeah.
So we'll talk. We'll
I like
do
the
a
finish.
Yeah, isn't that interesting too? I like the texture on that. Mm-hmm. So Acer's doing some interesting design things. We will talk both of those. We'll review both of those in a show to come. I'm just going to have to defer that because we're not even done yet. We have lots more to do. Mm-hmm. In fact, coming up in just a second, the new Xperia phone. Sony does really nice Android phones and gets very little credit for it. So Jason said, do I have to review this? I said, you know what? I would like to give Sony a chance. So let's review the hot new Xperia XZ3. And we'll do that in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, Quicken Loans, the best mortgage company in the world, number one in volume in the United States. But that only happened recently, last December.
They beat out the big bank that was the number one mortgage lender in the country for so long. And they did it with customer service. And that's why for 8 years running, they've been number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Boom, boom, boom. You focus on customers. In the long run, you win. And I just celebrate that. One of the ways Quicken Loans focused on customers and the customer experience is something we've been talking about for some time now, Rocket Mortgage, the entirely online mortgage approval process. But I wanted to get a little bit more granular and talk about a new feature of Rocket Mortgage. Let me go through the steps. Normally, when you get a home loan, and you probably know this, you go to a bank, you fill out a long application, they send you home with homework. You got to find pay stubs from previous jobs and statements from bank accounts you closed long ago, stuff that you probably don't even have. You're going to have to call people. It's a lot of work to put all that together, and then maybe they'll get back to you in a week, a month. Last, when we bought our house 5 years ago, 2 months. It can take a long time. Rocket Mortgage, completely different. First of all, you don't go to a bank. You can do it all online. In fact, you could do it on your phone. Step one, you go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS, create an account, answer a few questions. You could choose the term, the rate, the down payment of your loan, and then within usually 10 minutes, they're going to get you pre-qualified approval. That's how fast this is. 10 minutes! Over the next 24 hours, the next step happens. They call this the power buying process. Step two, they verify income, assets, and credit. Takes them about a day to do that. And then they give you verified approval, including a letter you could print out and give to your realtor, or better yet, the sellers. When you're buying a house, you show them that letter. It says you're good for the money. It puts you right up front like you're a cash buyer. That really is important when you're buying a home. You don't want to come in with a contingency. This way, you're set. You got the loan. Then, once you're verified, step three happens. You qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. This wasn't something we needed to do last year. The interest rates have been flat for a while, but they're starting to tick up now. The mortgage interest rates are going up right along with the Fed. So they've done something to make you kind of get rid of the anxiety. You know, that the fact that rates are going up means as you're shopping for a home, you kind of feel the pressure. We got to move here. We got to get this done because the rates could go up and that's going to cost us a lot more money. And you don't want to be pressured buying a house. It's enough pressure doing it, enough anxiety doing it anyway. So why get the extra pressure of having to do it quickly? With the Rate Shield approval, you get up to 3 months to shop, up to 90 days, and your rate cannot go up. It's locked in. If rates go down, your rate will go down, but your rate cannot go up. I love that. It eliminates all the anxiety. Well, not all, but most of the anxiety of buying a home. And whether rates go up or down, you win both ways. It's kind of the thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. It's easy to get started. Do it right now. RocketMortgage.com/NSS for new screensavers. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions could apply. It's based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Here's all you have to remember. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Do you want to try that Magic Leap?
I do.
Did you get to?
I didn't. No, I wasn't here yesterday, so I didn't get to try it. But I really do like the look of it.
I'm always tormented a little bit because when you see new technology, at least when I see, I almost always go, "Oh, that's really cool!" Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time I use VR. Oh, that's really cool. But I found that VR didn't have staying power. Like after a while, I didn't play it anymore. Same thing, Nintendo Wii, really cool for a day or two, but then you kind of lose interest. So I'm not sure exactly where this augmented reality is going to fit in. I feel like it's going to have legs.
Well, if you were wearing those goggles all the time and then you were just playing Pokemon Go in there, then I wouldn't catch you playing Pokemon Go as I did earlier in the show while we were doing an interview.
We needn't mention that. There was a wild Abro right there in the studio. I had to catch it. It could have bitten somebody.
Right, and if you were just wearing those goggles as a thing,
you wouldn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be just going like this, and you wouldn't know what the heck's going on, right?
That's true.
See, with what do you mean, Pokemon Go? No, I'm not going to wear them when they look like that. They got to look a little bit more like those other ones, just more like sunglasses. But that she said a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah. We're the frog in the pot. It's getting closer and closer to looking normal.
I could. So you know Amy Webb, right? We've had her on many times. She's a futurist. She did consulting
for a new sci-fi show that's on Hulu about going to Mars. It takes place in the near future, 2030.
The first. Yeah, my kids are watching that.
Yeah. So you can tell them you know the person who designed the future for mm-hmm. that show. And one of the things that's in that show is almost exactly like that Magic Leap. Everybody has regular glasses. Sometimes people wear them all the time. Sometimes people will pull them out. So you go into a room, and the hero of the show is wearing these glasses. And she says, I'd like to show you something. So the guy pulls out his glasses. They both say, sync. The glasses now are showing the same thing. And they're playing a game very much like that game. They're playing with swallows. You've ever seen barn swallows? Mm-hmm. They fly in big groups all in sync. And they're playing with them. And they're moving through them. And it's just like that. And I could see that. 2030, I think before then maybe even. Yeah, the first is good. I enjoyed it. Hulu. Sean Penn is the star.
Yes. I've seen it as I was walking through the living room. Mm-hmm.
It's not. I'm surprised your kids are watching it because it's kind of slow.
Yeah.
Not a lot of stuff happens.
Yeah, they can't wait to watch it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there's a teenager in it, so that's another big part.
Relatable.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We're going to wrap things up with the questions from the mailbag in a second, but first, let's get Jason Howell with that review of the new Sony Xperia smartphone watch.
Not very long ago, earlier this year, in fact, Sony released its next round of flagship devices, the Xperia XZ2, and later the XZ2 Premium. I actually reviewed the XZ2 Premium on All About Android episode 381. That was just back in August. So I will admit that I was a bit surprised to see Sony announcing the upcoming release of its new big flagship device, the Xperia XZ3. Two major flagship versions in 1 year. Not bad for Sony. Well, not long ago, I was surprised by the delivery of the XZ3, and while I'm not quite ready to give my full review yet, there are a few things that are worth checking out in more detail right now. So let's dive in. First, take a look at the design of the device. On a personal level, previous Sony Xperia phones have all been sort of minimalist and kind of boxy. Personally, I was never much of a fan of that aesthetic in Sony phones, and the XZ2 and later the XZ2 Premium showed Sony moving away from that boxiness. Well, with the XZ3, I'm happy to say that Sony is really onto something special here. They call this new curvy design approach ambient flow, and they've taken it further than ever on the XZ3, not just on the back of the device where we saw it before, but now on the front as well. So you get this nice infinity display sort of curve on the sides. Not only that, Sony has always embraced thick top and bottom bezels, but we live in an increasingly bezel-reduced world, and with the XZ3, those bezels are now minimized, which looks even better than ever, especially when you consider the new display ratio at 18:9 instead of 16:9. That makes for a taller, slimmer phone that, for me personally, really works. This phone feels really nice in the hand as a result, though my one complaint so far is the placement of the fingerprint sensor on the back of the device. It's almost dead center in the middle, which, when you hold the phone during normal everyday use, doesn't really line up with your finger to tap without moving your grip to accommodate. You're more likely to tap the camera instead, and that's never ideal unless you actually like smudgy photos. The display has been upgraded from an LCD panel to a new OLED panel, which looks really nice so far. Rich colors, deep blacks, just like you would imagine. Overall, there's a lot to like here. Look on the side and you'll find Sony's At This Point signature dedicated camera button, which is always nice to have. And that camera on the back is a single 19 megapixel sensor at f2.0 aperture. Not necessarily cutting edge, and low light performance will be the thing to watch out for here, but I have to say that I've snapped at least a couple of photos on this device so far in challenging lighting conditions, and I've been pretty proud of those pictures. Much more to explore here, but so far, not too shabby. And finally, and perhaps one of the more awesome points, is the software. This phone is running Android Pie out of the box, which has proven to smoothen out some of the rough edges that I encountered with some ugly legacy prompts that appeared on the XZ2 Premium. Pie looks great on the XZ3. Sony has also included a new software feature called SideSense, where I can tap on the side of the display twice quickly to pull up a menu of shortcuts of my choosing. It's a nice feature, though it does kind of strike me as odd in that it's really hard to do this single-handedly with a hand holding the device, doing the action itself. It's kind of reminiscent of the squeeze for assistant feature that you find on Pixel phones and other HTC devices, except that it relies on the tapping of the edge of the display itself and not the frame of the phone. So that almost ensures a user utilizes their other hand to do the tapping. Time will tell if this enhancement is actually useful or just a gimmicky inclusion. Overall, though, at this stage, I'm pretty impressed. I've wanted to give more time to Sony phones, and this is the first one in quite a while that has impressed me to this degree. The Sony Xperia XZ3 is set to go on sale in the U.S. on October 17th for $899.99. I'm Jason Howell, and you can catch my full review of this device in just a couple more days on All About Android here on twit.tv.
Thank you, Jason Howell. It's funny, I feel like, oh, poor Sony. They get no respect for their phones. They put all this work into them. And they just get no respect.
Yeah. So you let them use it for 2 weeks, and that's the respect that you get.
But honestly, it really is an iPhone, Samsung, and maybe Google Pixel world, isn't it?
Maybe.
Well, the Pixel is not a huge seller. It's really honestly in the U.S., Samsung and Apple.
It's true.
But I would like to make Google in there because I think those Pixel 3s are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let's get our mailbag in here.
Oh, thank you.
Nice. You're strong. Stronger than you look there.
Record push.
Well done. What's your name?
Mark.
Mark from, I'm thinking Boise.
No, actually Minnesota.
Minnesota. It's next to Boise.
Yeah.
Sort of. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Out of the way there. I'm teasing you, Mark. Normally I catch it, but I thought it just rolls really easily.
It does.
Pick an email, any email. Notice we're both wearing our Hook and Loop.
I really like that. That's my favorite band.
It's the sweatpants of watch bands, isn't it? Honestly, that's what Renee Ritchie called it. It's so comfy.
It is comfy, but the fluoroelastomer is more casual, I think.
It's not that it's casual, it's that it's comfy. And that, you know, it's Velcro, so it fits any size wrist. Up to a point.
I know. I have had it would not fit this wrist.
Uh-huh. See what I'm saying?
This wrist. So I'm having to wear it on the other hand.
I like it.
I'm building up this muscle.
Is that the new Series 4? Do you like the Series 4?
I love the Series 4. Yes, it is the new Series 4, and I love it.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
I haven't fallen yet, though.
I haven't fallen with it yet.
Yeah. If only you'd had that watch.
I know. It's true. It was one week Mark, early.
Take it away. Not all the way to Minnesota. Just you can leave it there. Email number one from Frank in Pennsylvania. Hi, Megan and Leo. Hi. Oh, boy. I found a few VHS tapes I would like to preserve. I found a few DVD recorder VHS combo devices that seem rather costly. I purchased one on eBay, and it was junk. I think if I can output the VCR to my iMac, I would just archive directly to the computer. That's true. What adapter is the most compatible for my iMac running the latest OS X? RCA to USB? That's about your only choice. I had an old Dazzler. Remember the Dazzler? I remember
the
that.
The B-Dazzler?
The B-Dazzler?
For your jeans?
Sort of. But it became unsupported 3 or 4 iMacs ago. Thank you, always, Frank from Pennsylvania. Yeah, so Panasonic still makes VCR DVD combos. That's the easiest way to do it. You push play on the the VHS tape, you plus record on the DVR, and it just moves it right over. And then you can put it on your computer. But if you want to control it, maybe control a little bit better the editing and, you know, edit it before you burn it to disk, things like that. You're absolutely right, Frank. What you need is something, because the iMacs have USB, I guess there might be Thunderbolt devices, but probably not. What you're going to get is something that will come off of the VHS. Now, if you've already got a VHS player, there's, as you mentioned, a couple of different ways to connect. The RCA jack is usually a composite connector. That's the one with red, white, and yellow. The yellow is video. The red and white is left and right audio. That's the lowest quality you can get. If you're lucky enough to have a little bit of higher quality VHS, you might have a better connector, like an S-video connector. If you can get that, that'd be even better. Component would be the next step up. You probably don't have component outputs on a VHS, and you certainly don't have HDMI on a VHS player. So look for S-video. Almost any box you buy for the iMac will have a variety of inputs, probably composite and S-video. Use the S-video if you can. You'll still have to record the audio separately, unfortunately, but that's just the way it works in this game. A number of companies still make them. Probably the best is Hapag. There's Elgato, which has gotten out of the business, I guess, is still selling theirs. That was really good, and I think a good one to use. But notice, there's S-Video all the way on the left, and then the yellow, red, and white for composite. This is a good price, $87.99.
But notice it's USB 2. For VHS, that's probably okay. I doubt anybody makes a USB 3, but it would be better because you wouldn't have to compress the video so much before digitizing it. In order to get it over a USB 2 channel, you've got to compress it. VHS already looks terrible. Compressing it's probably not going to make it look any worse. So Elgato's a good one. Hopog continues to be in the business. It's a good company, but a terrible name. It's an island. It's a town in Long Island. I believe it's spelled H-A-U-P-P-A-U-G-E.
Hopog?
It's pronounced Hopog.
Not Hopage.
Hopage. But it's spelled H-A-U-P-P-A-U-G-E, I think. There it is. And they have a variety of different choices. That's just an adapter cable. You're going to want something that is actually going to have an active digitizing component. Because what happens is the analog video from your VHS tape goes into a box. That's the external box. It turns it into bits, compresses it a little bit, and sends it over the USB into the computer. It'll also come with software that you can use on the computer to record it. Then you can edit it and burn it to DVD if you want. So, yeah, that's a perfectly good choice. Lots less expensive, and you'll have a lot more control over what happens.
Rich DeMiro was talking about this on his show, and he had a good tip, which is ask your friends and family if they've already done this, because maybe they have that $87
piece of
technology.
That's true. You only use it once.
Or, like, put it up on Nextdoor or something. Like, has anyone done this? And if no one has done this, but people might say, like, oh, I want to do that, then you can, you know, share. Because you're not going to use it after you're done with it. It's not going to have any other use.
God hopes you're not going to use it again. You're not shooting any new VHS tapes, I hope.
I have a bunch of VHS tapes full of episodes of Law & Order that my husband and I recorded because we would record it right off the
TV. Yeah, seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
It's now on Netflix in a higher quality, but hey, you got the VHS
tapes. But I might
want to
put that up
someday
on Nextdoor and see if I want to, yeah.
Pop that in the machine. Love that feeling, you know, chunk. I had a friend who, I've told this story before, when I worked in the radio station in San Francisco, recorded every episode of Cheers. He had practically a closet full of VHS tapes. Mm-hmm. And now he can just watch it on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. It's sad.
And it's, by the way, much better quality on Netflix than on that VHS tape.
Yeah, and no commercials.
And no commercials.
We have another email. This one is from Sal. And Sal says, would you happen to know of a good app for multiplication for an elementary level? Thanks.
Boy, I wish I'd had this when the kids were young.
I know.
I let my children down. I didn't teach them the times table. Not very well.
It's not too late. You can still teach them. I know where your son works, right across the hall from me.
Abby will never let me, she'll never forgive me for not. My dad, when I was little, laminated the times tables and drilled me. And I tried to do that with Abby. But it was painful for both. Mm-hmm. And so she never really got them. So this is nice that there's software.
Yeah, so this is just called Math Cards. This is the one that I first recommended to Sal, and it's super easy. Let's see. So you just, 9 times 4, what is it, Leah?
52.
I don't think that's true.
36.
Oh, 36.
Yeah. You didn't know. She said, well, 54 is close.
I can't do math when I'm stressed. then you can swipe that away. 12
48,
times 4,
yeah. This is hard, but I know my times table, 16.
So you can do them like that.
And what you need to do, a kid needs to do, if you're going to go on in math 35, is that should just be automatic.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to think. Do you have to think about it?
No.
It's just automatic, right?
Yes.
You just knew that was 50.
So that's super simple. And so I sent this to Sal.
That's as easy as can be.
Yeah.
And just make the kid do it.
Yes, exactly. So Sal sent me this email a long time ago.
You
and
can
I
win
found
this
it.
iPhone if you finish this game.
He had already found a couple he recommended, and this one I remembered that I used with the kids, Sushi Monster. You must have played this.
We did have CD-ROMs. She had Aladdin Math Adventure, but it was too much fun, and I don't think she learned her times tables so much.
Yeah, this
So I almost would rather see the first one.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So this one, you get the monster, and then you have to figure out.
Maybe that looks like fun.
It's fun.
That would be fun for the whole family.
Yeah, I think it would. I'm going to tell Henry about it on Monday.
Yeah.
Henry's
not too late. You can learn your times
exactly.
table.
Exactly. So, Sushi Monster. And then there's one more that Sushi Monster. These are both free.
Hoot and Mifflin Harcourt. So it's
like approved.
And this is crazy math flashcards, which has like a fun thing where I can put my take my picture. And this one's free, but look, then it's
me that's
in
cute.
There. Me, so I could do
the kid would like
table.
That, right?
Yeah, do I pick a table, and I guess I have to stir, and then pick a game. So there's a bunch of different games here. So one times one is one, and...
Okay, so this is kind of fun.
So it depends on if you think your kid just needs the flashcards, or if they need fun in order to do it.
What do you think? Do you think you'd learn as well doing this?
I don't know. I mean, maybe, like, you'd use this game when they're even younger. Like, just
right.
when they're really young, before they're even really learning their math right. times tables, just for fun. Like, that's the great thing. Should we keep doing this? The great thing about having iPads and I think I'm done with this now. But it's
you know your times tables.
I do. I really do. The great thing about having iPads and iPhones when kids are little, before they understand that there are really, like, great games, like Pokemon Go, you can say, like, oh, I have a good game for you. Play this game, Sushi Monster.
Don't
All the kids
them.
Are doing it. It's really fun.
Them. It's like the first time you give a kid Brussels sprouts.
Mm-hmm.
It's candy.
Yeah.
It's not good for you.
Right.
Don't eat too many of these. You'll have a toothache.
Yeah, because that stage does not last very long. No. They learn quickly that you're giving them math.
Right about the time they figure out that's not an airplane coming at their mouth.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's strained carrots. Thank you, Megan Maroney.
Thank you.
You came
for
in on your day
me.
Off.
I did.
You got dressed up. You put on a special festive cast.
I did.
And you did this show. And you didn't have to, but you did. But that's another.
I mean, if I wanted to get paid.
That's a story for another time. No, I'm really glad you were here. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Please thank Marco and the kids for letting us have you on a Saturday afternoon.
Well, they were.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, busy taking the PSAT and the SSAT.
Were they?
So, yeah.
It's that time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wait a minute. Is Annabella taking the SSAT now?
No, the PSAT. The SSAT is the one they take in eighth grade to get into high school.
To get into high school.
Yeah.
The PSAT is the preparatory test for the SATs.
Mm-hmm.
So Annabella took the PSAT,
mm-hmm.
and the boys took the SSAT.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for your sake, I hope they flunked. Because those secondary schools can really be.
Good to know. Good to know.
Son, you didn't get in,
right.
So it's vocational college for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Annabella also took her permit test, not her driver's
and
test.
How'd she do?
She passed that one too, unfortunately. It was, I wanted failure all around.
Failure
and I got nothing.
Is much better in that case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's exciting. So are you going to teach her or is Marco?
No, he or a professional, not me. I don't even like to drive with you, actually.
What? All these years we commuted into Tech TV.
I know,
TV,
but now with the Tesla, you're like, look, no hands.
Oh, no, I do a lot of that. Okay, put your head against this headrest because I'm going to step on it. We do the new Screensavers every Saturday afternoon right after the radio show. It's about 3 Pacific, 3 Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. If you want to stop by and join us, we'd love it. You can watch twit.tv/live. If you do that, be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. If you want to be in studio, we have a great studio audience. Thank you all for being here. All you have to do is email tickets@twit.tv, and we'll put a seat out for you. You can also download on-demand audio or video of everything we do at twit.tv. In the case of this show, it's twit.tv/NSS, new screensavers. And if you want to know where we are on YouTube or how to subscribe in your favorite podcast application, twit.tv/subscribe kind of lays it all out for you. Patrick Delahanty did a great job with, like, it's a table and all sorts of stuff. Things you can click. It's great. You can do math. It's fun. That's twit.tv/subscribe. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, studio audience. Thank you, Anthony Nielsen, our producer. John Slonina, our studio manager. Thanks to our technical director, Alex Gumpel. All these names up. It's just you and me. And thanks to you for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye, everybody! Yay!